Welcome back to the PRQ Homesteading Expanded. Shane's not here today, so I got to slip that F word in. Yeah. So, hey, thank you, Sunshine. It was so great talking to you today, having you back on the airwaves with your shining little self. So my love goes out to you. It's so exciting being back-to-back with the Whiplash Show. So very excited. And to everybody that's just tuning in, Shane and I are 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central is our new time slot for this show, and it is weekly. So to go to your radio show here on bbsradio.com for all things self-sufficient living right here in the heart of the U.S. of A. So today, the original 13 colonies, the badass founding states of the USA, such as Massachusetts, Virginia, New York, that kicked off the revolution back in 1776. So we're going to dive into a little history in regard to the 13 colonies and their process of homesteading. But before we get started, this episode is sponsored by Nano Ojas, the wellness brand for people who take their health into their own hands. And everyone that knows me, you know I'm really a big advocate on that. So you don't wait for someone else to fix things. Don't go to the hospital. Don't run to the doctors. Listen to your body. Listen to your spirit. And give it what it needs. That's what Nano Ojas is all about. High integrity, ultra absorbable nano sprays that deliver real nutrients your cells can actually use. No empty promises, no middlemen, just pure results. I know, I use the product, been using it for over a year. I love the wellness spray, five little squirts under the tongue, the skin spray, and then the nose spray. I haven't had to use that too much because I'm healing myself and staying very healthy and eating the right foods. But for those times when things get a little stuffy, it is a great product. So if you value sovereignty over your own well-being, check out www.nanoojas.net and use our code PRQHOME15 for 15% off of your order. And that's not just for the first order. That's all orders. Now you can go to their webpage, and again, they have a learn tab for all the scientific information. And as I said before, there are live testimonials also there. All right, so lines will be open today, and the call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. 6008. And for out of country, direct line is 323-744-4831. And for those of you that don't want to call in and want to share your successes, your challenges, you can email us at prqhomestead13@gmail.com with any questions, or share, where you're at in your homestead process. So feel free also to subscribe to our show. The subscriptions start at $2.99, and we also have a donation button. So if you don't want to subscribe and you want to support the show, you can make this donation anytime. Okay, so we're going to dive in right now. We're going to go right into the history of the 13 colonies and the early roots, colonial, and post-revolutionary land policies. I'm drinking a little hot tea today because it's a little rainy. It's a beautiful fall day out here in Western Michigan. So I'm really loving being inside today. Although I do always love the sunshine. Okay, starting off with the colonial land grants that began in the 1600s through the 1770s. As we all know, the European powers, Britain, France, Spain, granted land to settlers and companies to encourage colonization. Land was often distributed to wealthy individuals, speculators, or through headright systems. Okay, so what are speculators, you're wondering? Okay, so I'm going to give a brief overview of that. So in the 1700s, the 18th century, speculators were individuals or groups who engaged in high-risk financial ventures, betting on the future value of assets like land, stocks, commodities, or government securities. They weren't professional investors like they are today, but often wealthy merchants, aristocrats, and entrepreneurs, driven by, yes, greed, opportunity, and the eras of economic booms, of the eras of economic booms. Speculation exploded during the colonial expansions, wars, and the early stock markets, turning some into fortunes while ruining others. Think of them as original get-rich-quick schemers in an age without regulations. Interesting. Sounds familiar. Okay, so then we go on to the American Revolution and land as a reward. So the new U.S. government during this time used Western land to pay the soldiers and settle national debt. So the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 established a model for turning Western territories into states, prohibited slavery in the Northwest Territory, set the groundwork for organized settlement. Then along came the federal land policies that took shape between the 1790s and the 1830s. So some of the land ordinances of 1785 surveyed land into 6-mile townships at that time. Land sold to raise federal revenue. And then during the 1790s, there was a Yazoo land scandal, which exposed corruption tied to land speculation, created distrust of speculators. And that's what I just gave you an overview of the speculators and desire for more direct access for the settlers. Okay, we like that. The tides are changing. So the rise of expansionism during the time of Thomas Jefferson championed the idea of a nation of small farmers. Now, this was supported by policies favoring independent land owners over elite speculators. And then along came the Louisiana Purchase of 1803. When that happened, it doubled the U.S. territory, created pressure for new laws on landowner sale and settlement. So this was the Preemption Acts of 1830 and 1841. This allowed squatters to buy the land they already occupied before it was offered publicly. It gave the ordinary settlers more access, but still required purchase. And then on to the ideological and economic drivers of the 1820s and the 1850s. So the westward migration, also known as manifest destiny, cultural belief that Americans were destined to expand across the continent. So kind of just visualize that, you guys, at the time when there were no states and how it was growing. I mean, it's just kind of amazing. I get a visual of what the US might have been, what it looked like at that time. So it increased calls for free or affordable land to settlers. And then, of course, the railroads and the land speculation. Companies received federal and land grants. And this caused the speculators to buy and resell land for profit. Sound familiar? Again, past proves present. Many argued that land should go directly to settlers instead. All right, so they were having a little tug of war during that time also, like we do in present day. So political division over slavery, which we all know is still going on today. Only in a different way. Most of us know about it, some of us don't. So the northern politicians favored free homesteads. Southern politicians opposed them, fearing more free states. And then this was attempted before the 1862, when the homestead started. The homestead bill actually started off in 1854. It proposed 160 acres to grant to settlers, but it was blocked by the Southern Democrats and President Franklin Pierce. Now, I'm not a big history buff, but I don't ever remember a president by the name of Franklin Pierce. I guess he wasn't really famous for anything. So that's interesting. That's a new name for me. But maybe not for you, history buffs. So the Homestead Bill of 1860. It passed through Congress, but it was vetoed by President James Buchanan. The opposition tied to slavery and Southern political power. That was why it was vetoed. Then comes along the Civil War, which opens the door to Southern secession, which happened between 1860 and 1861. The Southern States of Congress removing the main opposition to free land policies. Republicans now dominated federal policy. Yay! No, I don't take either side, They're all one if you ask me. Okay, so back in that time during the Republican support, they viewed the homestead as a way to, okay, there were three views. To empower independent farmers, yay, promote northern style economic development, and then undercut the plantation slavery. All right. So Homestead Act passed May 20 of 1862, and it was signed by our wonderful President Abraham Lincoln, which offered 160 acres of public land to an individual. And that is still alive and well today. We're just doing it in a different way. We're recreating succession of the patent. So back then, the requirements to do this, you had to be 21 years of age or head of the household, live on and improve the land for 5 years, and pay a small filing fee. Now, I did some research on this, and I do believe they paid about $17 at the time. After that, evolution began, the expansion of modification, and there were four more acts that became true acts of that time. The Timber Culture Act of 1873, which gave extra land for planting trees. Now, I'm all for planting trees because we love the trees. We know that they're beautiful souls, so the more the better. Desert Land Act of 1877, land grants for irrigation in the arid states. And then the Kincaid Act of 1904, which gave up to 640 acres in Nebraska. Now, I do believe that was for, well, coming up next, the Stock Raising Homestead Act of 1916, which was 640 acres for grazing. So I do believe this is what started all the ranches and stuff at that time. Now, the Native American dispossession was probably the downfall of all this, even though it was a good thing for the settlers. The land was taken away from indigenous nations through treaties and force. So not something that we're really proud of. And it was called the Dawes Act of 1887, which broke up tribal territories into individual allotments. Fraud, and this is what brought upon the fraud and abuse with corporations and the ranchers, often used dummy applicants to claim the land. Some settlers abandoned claims due to harsh conditions. So the decline and end by the early 1900s, prime land was mostly gone. Homesteading dwindled through the 1930s. Officially ended in 1976, except Alaska continued to 1986. Now, I'm very curious of what happened between 1934 and 1979, and I won't go into that right now because I feel there's probably more to the story because I'm not finding a whole lot of history in regard to that. So the final nail in the coffin was the 1934 Taylor Grazing Act, which legally banned new homesteading on 173 million acres of public land, converting it to regulated cattle ranches. And that is what killed the program overnight. But again, it still was there from 1934 to 1979. So I'm just curious of what happened in that time frame. And we'll get into that in another show. But I do have some callers on the line. But real quick, I want to talk about, just real quick before I start taking the callers, about the Constitution. This is really important. There was no constitution of authority, a separate form of government. In the Constitution was created for the 10 square miles of land known as the District of Columbia and today Washington, D.C., Inc. All right, now where that stands right now, legality wise, is questionable. The original Constitution was entitled, now listen to these words, the Constitution for the United States of America, for the United States of America. It was the Act of 1871 that changed the title to the Constitution of the United States of America. By changing the title, the people were removed from the new Constitution, which only serves for the corporation of the United States and not for the people of America. So 1871 was when we all became slaves of the corporation because of the name change of the Constitution. So, because of this change, the people now during this time have no rights or freedom, no ownership of property, no right to travel, no right to marry, no rights to do business. They are all only debt slaves who must serve the corporation. Slaves have no rights. Only privileges, permissions to live on their master's properties. Okay. So then I looked up what the Constitution's real name. It is actually today the United States Constitution of America. Now, this is incorrect and not used officially. If it mixes elements but doesn't match the preamble, or any official title to the of America part appears only in the preamble's closing. Okay, so the United States Constitution for the United States, partially accurate but not official, the United States Constitution. This is the standard short form for the United States, but it echoes the preamble, the Constitution for the United States of America. So it is descriptively close. So I'm not really sure where that stands today, but I feel, this is what I feel that the Constitution for the United States of America represents the United States Constitution, and I do believe that it's back to the original name in this present day. Now, I don't know that for sure, but that's what I'm feeling just in my research. Okay, so we have some callers on the line. I see Karen from Pennsylvania on line two. Would like to talk about the 13 colonies. So come on and Karen, are you there? Hello? Did we
Hear
lose?
me?
Oh, there you are. Hello, Karen. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. What do you got to share with us?
Wait, good way to start the show.
Ah, thank you.
Well, I figured I was just calling because, I'm in the 13, and we did take a little trek to Virginia, and it was just like they couldn't blow us off fast enough. So I figured I would do a live recording because I'm going to go for it now that we have some help and it doesn't feel as daunting because it just felt so, it was like everywhere you would go and who has, like you just get turned away. So I'm going to give it a shot and we're going to do a live, I'll just keep calling in and give you an update because I really want to do it now.
Awesome. That's so exciting. So where are you at right now in your process?
I'm in the very beginning because, well, so I mean, I do have county records. And so what's really cool is I really think that there may already be something because it only goes back to the two previous owners, but that's, and the rest of the records are not recorded in the county. So I have to really figure out like where to start. So it's going to be probably try old county records. And then they said go to the state archives. And so they kind of like bounce you all over the place. One tells you to go one place, you know how it goes. So I'm just going to start that process of the, and I know Virginia is not it. So obviously we won't do that. So I'm going to start at the county and just kind of say, hey, I'm interested in finding out the history of my home and kind of go in that way to put, to just see. I really don't know because it's everything. I think it only goes back to 19, maybe 70, and the, so anything before that, there's no record.
Do you have access to like the microfiches and stuff? Because I know there's also the National Archives. Are you familiar with that?
A little bit, yeah. I'm just starting because when I tried before, it was so daunting. I was like, all right, I'm gonna throw on this. Maybe I got enough stuff going on, but I feel like it's time now to try it. So that's why I would call in because here I am. I don't really have anything done. So we're going to kind of play this out together.
Okay, and to just in my experience, the foot going on foot and actually going to these places and physically looking for the information, I actually went to the Register of Deeds my first time and went into the back room where they had all these big books with where people would sign in their, I guess they were registration books at the time for the year. So it was very interesting. To find all this information because I had a hard time finding the patent for this property because of the way that the parcels were broken up. So I ended up finally finding it on the Bureau of Land Management, BLM. And there were, I do believe, four other patents, and I really wasn't sure which one was which because of, the section, the location and so forth. So I ended up going to the township here, and I met with a lady. She's an older lady. She was about 80 years old. And sometimes the older people really know a lot, and they love sitting down and talking with you. And she was able to look at all five of the patents and looked at my warranty title and was able to figure out which patent was for my lots, because I have four lots on the small section that I homesteaded. So, do you have something available for you at that in that area like that, like your local townships or anything?
Actually, that's a really good idea because that would save me a lot of trouble. I could start there. I didn't
Yeah.
even think of that. I would start at county, but I could go local first. And it is an old town. I mean, like, I'm just going to put it out there. I'm right outside Philadelphia. So, I mean, there's a lot of history here. And so there's archives all over the place, but that they bounce you a lot because of the area, because it's all connected. So that's a really great idea. And I can start there. I'll go to the township this week and then I'll report back next week.
Yeah, and plus you can learn so much, and then you create a relationship with the local folks, and they're always willing to help you, especially when we're coming from the heart, you know. And you know, I do believe Aloha was I think she mentioned on her show with Shane her process, because I think she's from that area, and she shared her experience. Did you get a chance to listen to that?
Yes, and she's the one helping motivate me to do this.
Oh, you know? Beautiful. She's so wonderful. I love her. She's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. We truly appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you. Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate you, keeping up with this. And it was kind of falling into place. And it feels like, okay, you know, you have people that are doing it, and that you don't feel like it's such a big mountain to climb anymore because you have support. Not that we didn't have it before, but there was so much else going on with timelines and things. You know, I had to deal with all that crap first. And that's a lot.
Exactly. Also, just to also give you some more, like if you have some type of assembly in your state, I just joined the Michigan Assembly and I'm learning so much. There's a lot more people working not just in the homestead arena, but in other arenas in regard to freeing ourselves from the system. So another good resource to get more help, because there's a lot of people out there that are doing this that really know the system. And I was just on a call last night with a group, and I'm learning so much just from hearing other people's stories. So if you have an opportunity to do that, by all means, get connected.
That's great. That's a really good idea, because I kind of feel like I'll be your crash test dummy for Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much, and much love to you.
Much love to you. Have a wonderful day.
You also. Okay. So I do have an email from our wonderful Lee in Virginia, and I was supposed to read this for everybody a couple weeks ago, but we got busy on the show, so she sent me an update in regard to where she's at in her her homesteading process. So I'm going to go ahead and share that with everyone. So the BLM, which for those of you that are just tuning in, BLM is the Bureau of Land Management, does not manage any private land records for the original colony states, which most of us know that. They do manage a few national and historic parks sprinkled through them. So you have to do your own research or hire someone to do it for you. I personally like to do my own research. That's how I learn. She says, I started by finding out where the local land archives are held in my area in Chesterfield County, Virginia. They are held at the district courthouse. You will need the current address and owner's name to begin your search. The staff there were very helpful in showing me how to use the online database there and what to look for in the documents to take me backwards in time. That's the fun part of this whole thing, is we get to go back in time. I've never been a real history buff, but I'm really liking it for some reason in my leveling up of my decade here in this present day and time. Then she goes on to say, you will start with the current owner's name and the address. You will go back to the documents, one owner at a time, as far as you can go. You will start looking at the land deeds in more recent years, but those will most likely turn into land grant documents the further back you go. So she notes here in highlight, you may have to go to multiple locality archives, as some of the original localities were divided over time. This was the case for my county. In my case, this took me back to a land grant from the 1700s. This was not, however, the original land grant for the property, I was researching. So I was directed by the local staff to go to the state archives, which in Virginia are held in the capital city of Richmond in the state library. Okay, that is the capital city of Richmond in the state library, to those of you that are listening that are in that area. Once I made my way to the state archives, the staff were again helpful in getting me set up on the microfiche viewer, which allowed me to go back in time to the original land grant from the King of England from the 1600s for the property I was researching. I could then request certified copies of the original grant from the state library. I will say that these original land grants are sometimes difficult to read as they are written in hand, written Old English script. After getting this far, I halted my own journey as I'm not currently on the land where I wanted to establish my collaboration center. I turned my attention and activities to exploring and have been enjoying that. I will get back on the homesteading process once I find it. So she did put a special note, and it says, because the land in the original colony state were never federalized, any defense of a claim of succession for a land grant would not fall under the Homestead Act. I have not been updated on whatever this potential issue has been fleshed out yet. She goes on to say that we looked into defense based on the state constitution or any original treaties between the colonies and the local native tribes. I would strongly encourage anyone interested in pursuing this process in the colony states to at least go through the process of searching for the original land grant. It was a great education for me. So that was shared by Lee from Virginia. So thank you, Lee, so much for sending that in. Appreciate it. Okay, so I'm going to go on, and I want to talk a little bit more about the Homestead Act and the impact that it had on the indigenous nations real quick. Because the land was actually theirs from the beginning, and it's kind of sad that how it all played out. So the impact, the Homestead Act of 1862 did not create displacement of Native peoples. It accelerated and institutionalized it. The act assumed that Western lands were public and thus available to be claimed, even though most of the lands were still home for sovereign indigenous nations. So then, the legalized land seizure, the U.S. government granted land it did not rightfully own. Territories in the Great Plains, the Midwest, and the West were declared federal property after treaties, often coerced, violated, or ignored, or military force. Homesteaders occupied land that had been guaranteed to Native nations just years, sometimes months, earlier. Forced removal and broken treaties. The expansions of settlement led to new waves of relocation. Treaties viewed as obstacles to land grants were renegotiated under pressure or outright disregarded. Yeah, disregarded. Okay, and then it says examples were Dakota War of 1862 in Minnesota, Sand Creek Massacre, Colorado, 1864, the Red River War of Texas, and the Nez Perce War of 1877. All right, the settlers plowed grasslands, cut forests, and hunted animals that indigenous nations depended on. Okay, so just a little overview of that. The near extinction of the buffalo, also encouraged by federal policy, destroyed the livelihoods of Plains Nation, Lakota, Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Comanche. I found out not too long ago that I have a little Apache blood in my lineage, so very interesting. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. We have another caller, Kimberly from Michigan. Hello, Kimberly.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Beautiful day to you.
Thank you. To you also. To you also. It's nice to hear your voice. Lovely teaching. It was really interesting to hear what you had to report today. Thank you for sharing all of that.
Absolutely. It's very fascinating how all of this, you know, it just reminded me so much of what we go through today. You know, it's like the past proves future. So
we do seem to have a pattern.
Exactly. What is your insight in regard to the colonies? Do you have anything you can share with the audience?
You know, I'm from New York. I'm actually a New Yorker born. I am domiciled on Michigan now, and pretty much have had a connection with the Michigan land for all of my life, just from family lineage and so forth. So I lived out east. I was born out east. So, you know, my affinity is definitely, you know, got some connection there. You know, I really don't have much that I think I could really offer as far as the difference between how we are going about actually gaining our land back and claiming our land. I have been working diligently on Michigan, so I guess I really haven't been paying close enough attention to all of it. You know, you're sort of in your own scramble and you're in your lane. So it's, some of this is new information that's coming to me as I'm learning along with everybody. And I'm delighted for the woman that came on from Pennsylvania. Yes, there is a Pennsylvania Assembly, and I would recommend that she get in touch with them and consider also changing her status, because that's really going to be one of the biggest keys to the ownership here, is breaking your contract with their claim on you, like you had pointed out with constitutional things. With the birth certificates, we basically got incorporated, and we have to break that relationship. Otherwise, we're subject to their jurisdiction. And so when you join your state assembly, that's one of the things that you actually do, is you have, as a man or a woman, claimed your own living life back, gotten yourself back onto the land and soil jurisdiction and out of the commerce that they claimed you in the incorporated state, and you reclaim all of that jurisdiction onto yourself. And then you can, as a man or woman, move into actually serving and trying to help other men and women to set themselves free and also claim your lands back as your nation states. So all 50 states have been called to assemble, and Pennsylvania is going to be a very key state, because that's where our actual real government is based, in Philadelphia. And so this is where, you know, they have a wonderful assembly that's growing. We actually were in some meetings with them yesterday, and lovely people. So I'd recommend, please consider reaching out to your state assemblies. All 50 states are in session, so every man and woman on every state can contact their state assemblies. You can go to the TASA, the American State Assemblies .org. It's states dot state. Can you pull that up so I can just read it just a second?
And I'll also post it on my show page for people to
perfect
review.
Right. It's basically, it would be states dot American State Nationals with an S dot org. And you can find all state assemblies there and get redirected to the state coordinators and begin to make contact with the men and women that can support you there. Where this becomes important, and one of the things I was going to say, do you know why the age of majority was 20, or why the age was 21 in one of the ways that they could actually start their claim? Do you know why it's 21?
I'm going to say because you started life early.
No, really, because in common law and on land and soil, the age of majority, basically the age when you're recognized as an adult, is at 21. And so this is where a man really could not actually take a claim until he actually had reached the age of majority. And so
that's why you have
drinking age and things like this at 21.
Right, right. That's exactly what I was trying to say when you come of age. So my apologies, I got that wrong. But yeah, 21.
No, I think it was, you know, you were perfect. You were perfect with it. It's just, you know, naming it a different way. So yeah, but it's another clue that you really need to be in a common law state to have full claim on your land. And yes, every man or woman is sovereign in their own right. It's just, we all got captured at our birth.
Oh boy, did we. We were actually talking about that last night in regard to, I had a friend that was telling me that when you are born, the placenta and the umbilical cord are actually what is recorded on the birth certificate. kit. So it's basically not you, it's the placenta and the umbilical cord. Is that correct?
I believe from my research and my studying on that, that's true. I can only go on the education. I'm also learning and deep diving. And so thus far, I'm seeing that prove out to be the same. The website I had just shared with you also has what's referred to as the dead baby scam, terribly. But it has modules on there that you can go learn more about this and how this whole thing has basically been proved out. So yeah, it's really quite amazing all of the various ways that we have just been captured over and over and over. It's so egregious and it's so wrong. But the really great news is it's been discovered. God, blessed us and, made this revealed to various men and women who have been, sacrificing and working on these things and proving these things out for decades now that, left now novels for us, not any breadcrumbs anymore, novels of proof of all of this. And the hope is you can get out of it. You can undo it, and you can do it in this lifetime and set yourself free and teach others how to do it too. And it's all lawful. It's all everything undoing fraud. So don't be afraid of it. It's something that when you first hear it, it's shocking. I mean, you can't believe this is actually going on. It's happening. And we try to keep a positive upbeat about it, that, there's a really happy, positive side of things that is going on here. You got to look at the ugly because you got to know what happened. You got to know how to undo it. Got to know how to guard against it and help other people get free from it. But, there's hope. And that's really what the great news is. And that's with what work you work, the work you're doing here with even bringing forth the land patenting and, doing your chain of title, getting things recorded, claiming your land. We have to claim it. If we don't actually state it and claim it, it's not going to just be given to us.
Yeah, that's for
You have
true.
to. You have to actually claim it. So this is really a big process, and there are a lot of people that are waking up to this, and they're actually in process of doing it. So to the
Yeah.
woman that called in a few minutes ago, I love that you are coming to the realization that you may not have a very long chain of connections. Sometimes they're very short. Other times they're more complicated, like when you get into sections like you've talked about where they've been parceled down and lotted down and so forth. But there are a lot of properties that have very short chains of title and they can be found quickly. So, have hope and optimism that you may also be on one of those, that it will be easy to put it together. And yeah, like you say, you're going to have good folks that are going to help you in these record offices to actually procure your own chain of title. Some will, be more helpful. Others may know what you're doing and they're a part of the bad side of it and they're going to block you a little bit, make it a little more difficult. But keep persevering. And it will come together. I mean, the law, it's written, it's in law, it's our rights, and others have done it. So it's just a matter of just sort of following the map that's laid out for you. And there's lots of us out here that will cheer you on and help you and say, this is what I did, right or wrong. And we're figuring it
And
out. And
I'm
oh,
really amazed that.
the land's coming back.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just said the land's coming back to us. Yeah, we're
Yeah,
claiming it.
absolutely. And I'm just amazed, since I've joined the assembly of all the people that are assisting and know so much, and especially people knowing how to talk the language when they have to go in front of, the powers to be in the court system. And it's just really, and that, I guess that's the part that I personally want to really learn, to be able to talk the language when and if that ever comes my way. Now, I'm not contemplating that happening, but it's always good to be prepared. And so that's the journey for sure.
And the more that you are listening to these things, studying them on your own, using your own hand to, kinetically write and pass this through you, you're picking it up. You're imprinting it on yourself. And a lot of times you're just revealing the truth that you just sort of step into it and it just feels like the coat you put on just fit you finally. And so you just it will meet your feet as what I will say to you. And you've already kind of called it in and are magnetizing it to yourself. So it's just a matter of time. And you already do so very beautifully and elegantly with saying, what you are knowing, and you're just getting sharper. And that's what, some of the groups that, in the assemblies are doing with their committee meetings and then just extra kind of curricular meetings where we can get together and discuss topics and really dive deep into these things and discuss and learn what worked with others and what hasn't worked, and share information. And so it just makes us sharper. And really,
Absolutely.
It's all because we've all had rough paths getting here. And, we all saw a way, and we, moved into our boots and said, okay, we got to fix this. And so we invite everybody, please be a part of it. We, the people, are supposed to be doing this, and we need
Absolutely.
help. I mean, we need it. Come,
I
please.
hear
I'm
you.
here, please.
And Kimberly, I love talking to you. You got to come back on the show again. I do have another caller.
Love
And
to.
thank you so
Please
much. You
do.
have so much knowledge that you bring, and I appreciate you. I'm so glad we're
I appreciate
connected.
you. Absolutely. And if I can help, let me know. Happy to offer help. But join your assembly, mymichiganassembly.land, mymichiganassembly.land. Thanks so much, Robin. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You too. Talk to you soon. Okay, we have David from New York. David, I get to actually talk to you today. I love it. Bring him on.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Happy Q Day.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I was just reading your email. You were saying that you're going to talk about the 13 colonies in homesteading history. And here I hear you're mentioning, you're talking about it. So I'm in New York, okay, in New York City in particular. I'm interested in getting started with doing the homesteading here before I leave New York. I'm planning on going elsewhere, but before I do, I know so many people in the boroughs and also in outside of the boroughs of New York, but in New York State, who own property or believe that they do. So I want to help them before I leave. So would you please tell me how I can get started in looking through this information, how and what to do so that I can get started before I leave? Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And actually, I know a couple of people in that area that have done it, that when I speak to that person, if it's okay with you, if you send, I do believe I have your email address. I can maybe have that person reach out to you, because this person has actually done it and has been successful at it. But again, for
I
those
appreciate
areas,
that.
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I was just saying that I would appreciate very much if you had them to contact me.
Absolutely. And also, we were just talking about it. Try to start at your multiple, at your local archives, okay? Places like, start with your, for me, as I was telling that other lady, I went to my local township, and I'm sure you guys have something like that in your area, possibly, where you have like little counties divided up, townships, okay? So find the oldest person in there. They're going to know everything, and they're very, very easy to work with. So just to get started in that, and just get your feet wet and start looking. State libraries are also good spots to go to. But I will, I promise you, I will send you some information via email, because I have your email address, and we'll get you going. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much, Robert. Appreciate
Thank
you.
You. Thank
we
you.
We all appreciate what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. You're beautiful. I appreciate you. Okay, let's see. Where are we at on time? All right. So I don't see any more callers right now. So just to finish up on the impact of the original 30, or no, I left off on the, the buffaloes. Okay, the reservation system expansion. As settlers claimed more land, Native nations were pushed onto smaller, fragmented reservations. Many were relocated multiple times to make way for homesteadings or the railroads. Okay, so then there was the Dawes Act of 1887, the Homestead Act for the Natives. In disguise, it was in disguise. Broke up communal lands into individual allotments. Surplus land was open to white homesteaders. And then the result, the native land holding shrank from 138 million acres to 48 million in a few decades. Just so sad that it went that way. So anyway, the bottom line is the homestead was one of the most consequential drivers of the indigenous dispossession. It transformed communal, ancestral, and treaty lands into private property for settlers, backed by law, the military, and the federal policy. But I do believe there are things in place right now for certain tribes where they receive modalities monthly on a monthly basis for that. But, to me, I don't think money can replace land and freedom for anything. And that's just my opinion on that. All right. So I think we're coming to the end here. So I'm going to wrap it up as we close. Today, remember, the homesteading isn't about land, labor, or legacy. It begins in the heart. And let's not forget that part of it. When you're doing your homesteading, this has to come from the heart. And it's got to be, for me, it has to be a place that I love. So long before any boundary was drawn or deed was signed, the true homestead was the inner refuge we build through intention, compassion, and connection. And through this process, in this journey that I've been on, I am meeting so many people and making so many connections. And I'm finding that all these people that are working for their freedom are just compassionate, loving, and willing to help. And there's a lot of us out there. It's more than what I imagined, to be honest with all of you. So whether you steward acres of earth or a single sacred breath, plant your roots in love from your heart. Cultivate peace like a garden, like your own garden in your backyard. And let your heart be the first land you reclaim, restore, and honor. So, you guys, until we meet again, I walk gently, I live deeply, and you do the same. And let your spirit tend the home within, which is your heart center. So I want to sign off with gratitude and grounded truth. Thank you, BBS Radio, for hosting us. Shane's not here today. He's with his beautiful children. And a huge, huge shout out to all of our amazing listeners tuning in today and all of you that called in. Your support keeps the homesteading spirit alive. Thank you so much from my bottom of my heart. And I'm sure Shane feels the same. Join us next week, October 25th, for another exciting episode of the PRQ Homesteading Expanded. So until then, keep sowing, keep growing, and live the homestead life. Take care, everyone. I love you so much. Thank you for joining me.